Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Getting By, episode 39, for Friday, the 4th of November, 2011. My name is Craig Jones, and I'm joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy.
How are we doing this Friday afternoon?
TGIF, Craig. TGIF.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, this is Friday, so that means only one thing, Chemslave. It's Technology Day. Oh my god. So, if you go to our show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com, you will immediately be presented with a metric shit ton of stories. However,
you'll be blown away. Yes.
Yes, you will be blown away, and yes. But the thing is, a lot of these are topical. So a lot of these will apply to like one topic. And several, stories will all be related. So, if you're interested in what we talk about, go to our show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com. And don't be intimidated by the list of stories. They all relate. So, Chemslave, possibly the most fascinating story of the week has been HP. Now,
yes.
I don't know if you recall... I'm tempted almost to go back and find the episode that we talked about HP last, because I was pretty bullish, pretty favorable about Meg Whitman becoming CEO, contrary to a lot of the opinions in the tech industry. I thought that she might be a good fit for the CEO position at HP. She might be uniquely qualified to provide some cohesive vision for where HP should go. And I have to tell you, I am happy with what she's doing. Now, just to recap, you will recall that her predecessor, Leo Apotheker, had wanted to get HP out of the PC building business.
What an idiot he was.
Yeah. He is looking worse and worse, let me tell you. So he wanted to spin off the Personal Systems Group at HP. That is responsible for the building of all HP desktop and laptop computers, as well as any handheld devices and WebOS, formerly Palm devices. And other non-printer consumer electronics. The printer division is a very important division of HP, and it's actually in its own area. But the PSG, the Personal Systems Group, is basically the PC division. You can almost think of it as Compaq. That's basically Compaq. If you go back and think about the HP-Compaq merger of 2004, what ended up being the PSG is more or less Compaq.
It's scary to actually know that you actually know the date of that.
Yeah, I know. Well, you see, that we're getting a little bit into the weeds now, but that merger it began in 2003. It closed in 2004, in the very early part of 2004. Was instigated by the then CEOs of HP and Compaq. The CEO of HP was Carly Fiorina, and she was at the time a revolutionary CEO because she was a woman, and she was the woman of a woman who was the head of HP, which made her by far and away the most powerful woman in the world in terms of corporate governance. It was astonishing, and she pressed this deal between HP and Compaq, the number one and number two PC makers in the world, to merge. And it basically led to her ousting as CEO. It did not go well. It was a very costly, very time-consuming affair. And it was seen by many people in the technology industry and in the business community as a failure. And HP has in some ways been plagued by that merger ever since. So that is actually an important topic. And that's why I know the date. It closed in early 2004. Anyway, back to 2011, Leo Apotheker had wanted to spin off the PSG division. Basically, it would have been the rebirth of Compaq, regardless of what they would have called it. that would have basically undone Carly Fiorina's decision to buy Compaq. Now, Veo Apotheker had come from a German company called SAP. It was a data analytics company. It was an infrastructure company. It dealt with information. It dealt with server-side back-end solutions. Did not deal with consumer devices at all. And when HP hired Veo Apotheker, they kind of had the vision that he would take HP and make it more like SAP. Evidently, the board of directors didn't think he was going to try to make it a carbon copy of SAP. His proposal to shut down the WebOS division and spin off PSG into its own company was what did him in as president and CEO of HP.
Yeah, that pissed a lot of people off.
It did, because HP was the number one maker of PCs in the world. It wasn't a big cash cow for them, unfortunately. Their margins were not good. But I would argue that's more a failure of execution than a failure of the market itself. Anyway, he was ousted, and Meg Whitman was brought in. And she originally said, well, you know, we're going to go along as planned, but we're going to review that decision, and we will make a final determination at the end of October. Well, the end of October has already approached, and you know, last week, with several days to spare, Meg Whitman announced that she was going to reverse that decision, and the PSG group is going to stay a part of HP. What that means for WebOS, the remnants of Palm, is as yet unknown. But for right now, Meg Whitman has saved HP as we know it. And I have to say, she handled this very, very well. She showed decisive leadership. And she came out within a week of her deadline and, you know, in very plain spoken terms, said, we are staying with the PC division. We think it's a strong division. We think it's an important market for the future. And she also hinted at several investments in that division to capitalize on the strength and market share of HP. One of those things is a Windows 8 tablet that is in development. Now, you might think, well, the HP touchpad, the tablet that runs WebOS, did not do so hot. As a matter of fact, that failure pretty much doomed WebOS and HP. So you might be thinking, well, HP probably should stay away from the tablet business. But with Windows, they will be dealing with Microsoft, a partner with which they have a lot of experience. And they will be dealing with a form factor and a paradigm, which is slightly different from the iPad Android WebOS experience. No matter how much Microsoft wants to position Windows 8 as a iPad competitor, it will never be an iPad competitor. And I think HP knows that. And I think HP is going to be very well equipped to make a very capable Windows 8 tablet.
I'm not sold on the whole Windows 8 tablet scene yet.
Neither am I.
Until I see one that actually looks good and does what it's supposed to, which, of course, we're still probably a year or more away from actually ever seeing something like that in production. So,
yeah, no, I'm in full agreement with you. I don't have high hopes for Windows 8 at all, actually, at least on the tablet side of things. Anyway, as well as HP can do with what Microsoft gives them, I expect that they will have a much more successful product there than with the touchpad. So, you know, that little hint of what is to come, as well as a very clear and definitive answer for the future of what we consider to be what HP is, a device manufacturer, I think it has really improved HP's standing. Their stock price jumped three or four points. So it was a marked increase. And the market liked her decision. The tech industry liked her decision. And even one of her most vocal critics in the tech industry, John C. Dvorak, was forced to write a column saying, well, you know what? if she keeps this up, I might have to say that I was wrong about her. Yeah, he wrote a rather snide column saying that she didn't have the business experience. Well, she didn't have the experience in the business side of the electronics industry to be able to effectively guide HP. But even Dvorak was impressed by her performance. And I have a very good feeling about this. And I think Meg Whitman is going to end up being a very positive force for HP and is going to make HP into a very interesting company in ways that it has not been interesting for decades. I really have a very high opinion of Meg Whitman and the direction that she is leading HP in. What do you have to say about this?
I agree. I'm waiting to see what she does next.
Now, let's be clear. I'm not expecting her to be the next Steve Jobs. And I'm not expecting HP to have the kind of excitement that Apple has. But you don't need to. No company has what Apple has. You can even argue that the level of press excitement that Apple gets is inappropriate and bad. You could easily make that case. But I think Meg Whitman, in terms of business administration, I think has the potential to really be like the Lee Iacocca or the Jack Welch of the of this decade's technology scene. I'm a fan, just to leave it at that. So, you know, Chemslave, this has been a week that has seen a lot of stories about HP, and I briefly mentioned WebOS.
WebOS. What is the state of that?
Yeah, I wanted to, before I moved, I almost moved on from HP, but I wanted to address WebOS quickly. That is the touch-based operating system that Palm came up with as a competitor to the iPhone. It was supposed to be the OS that would save Palm. Unfortunately, it did not, and Palm ended up selling itself to HP. It is now part of the Personal Systems Group. Now, Todd Bradley, the head of that group, has said that WebOS is still going to be around, and they haven't made any firm decisions about what the future of it's going to be, whether they will try to sell it or whether they will continue to try to leverage the technology within HP, either on phones and tablets or in printers or licensing it to third-party manufacturers. Regardless, Todd Bradley says that there is still going to be some future for WebOS. Unfortunately, that is in direct contradiction to various reports in the media that HP is getting ready to lay off the whole WebOS division by early November. It's even possible that by the time our audience is listening to this show, we might have more information about this, and it might not be good information. There is the rumor, and it seems to be a pretty credible one, that HP is readying the whole WebOS division to be laid off. And if that's the case, then that is officially the end of a long and torturous story of Palm. By the way, that'd be an interesting that'd be an interesting show too, the history of Palm, because that's fascinating. It's a sad story in many cases, but it's fascinating. It is sad. I'm holding in my hand right now one of the original Pris. It's a nice phone, a little bit clunky nowadays. It's a little bit thick, but it was a nice phone. And
it
I have
the Pre, the one with the really creepy commercials.
Yes,
with that weird chick.
Oh my god! Her eyes. Jeez! Oh my god! Yeah, no, that was just terrible.
See, I wouldn't buy the device just based on those commercials. It just freaked the hell out of me.
Well, it wasn't just the commercials that did them in, because nobody bought these phones. It was a shame. So, yeah, it's, you know, this is a story that we will probably be revisiting, and probably not in a good way. Because regardless of what Todd Bradley has said, I suspect that WebOS is not long for this world, unfortunately. Alright, so let's briefly move on now to Apple. You know, in iOS 5, they have this feature called Newsstand. Kemsley, if you want to tell me what Newsstand is?
Never used it. That's where you can buy newspapers.
That's right. It's a central location where you can buy magazines and newspapers or any sort of periodical publication. And the cool thing about it is that Newsstand-approved applications can download the content once per day in the background. So that when you wake up in the morning, for instance, you can have your New York Times freshly updated. Or your, unfortunately, the Wall Street Journal has not adopted this format yet. But other ones, like the San Francisco Chronicle, have. And then you have magazines like Wired. A lot of Condé Nast, almost all the, in fact, I think maybe all. I think all the Condé Nast magazines are on Newsstand now. And it's been a boom for them. Condé Nast sales have been up. Guess how much they've been up?
Can't guess.
298% since Newsstand.
That's a small amount, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a small amount, all right. That is an astronomically high amount, and it is far in excess of what they were expecting. Newsstand has been a huge boon for them, just because it provides people an easy way of seeing what's available in terms of professional published quality material. And Apple provides subscription models that make it easy to subscribe, either weekly, monthly, yearly. And the background downloading just makes it very convenient. It's a great system. I have used it in the past. I've subscribed to Wired, The New Yorker, The Daily, which is a News Corp-owned tablet-specific newspaper, and also other applications as well that are not in Newsstand but take advantage of the Newsstand functionality. It's fantastic.
How does it how do you read it, like on an iPhone? Is it any good?
Not all Newsstand applications are for iPhone and iPad. What a Newsstand application is just a regular application. Once you tap on the app, you know, tile, it'll launch into what you have always known as being an app, except that the icon will update each day to reflect, you know, the change. The new newspaper, for instance, or the new magazine cover. But not all of them are iPhone and iPad. You know, some of them are only iPad. And there's actually not a whole lot available for the iPhone right now, unfortunately.
So why even give us the icon? I already icon my iPhone, I already hit it.
Yeah.
Using a little cool little trick where you sort of have fast fingers and you sort of move it into a folder really quickly.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. On the iPad, it makes a lot of sense, but on the iPhone right now, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, I'll tell you that for those applications that do appear on the iPhone, it does look nice. It looks as nice as the developer wants it to look. Apple has no control over that. Newsstand is only a new smart folder where all of your publications are now housed. And a Newsstand provides functionality for, like, background downloading and dynamic icon changing. But aside from that, it's just a regular application. So they look as good as the developer makes it look. Now, on an iPad, it makes a lot of sense, and it's a great thing. Not a lot of content yet for the iPhone. But, you know, Google and Yahoo both are seeing this, and they're thinking to themselves, well, you know, this is pretty good. We should probably try to get in on this. So they are going to be developing their own Newsstand-like applications for both the iPhone, the iOS ecosystem, and the Android ecosystem. So this is going to get interesting to see what kind of content deals Yahoo and Google can do. I'm sure in some cases they're going to try and get content that Apple does not yet have. So I can't wait to see what they do. I don't think it's going to be as holistic an experience as what you get with Apple's newsstand, just by virtue of the fact that Google and Yahoo will not have the same access to the operating system that Apple has. But it's still going to be interesting to take a look.
Well, still going on Apple news, I saw that the iPhone 4S has having battery life issues.
Oh my god, like you wouldn't believe. Now, last week I told you that I bought a 4S, and I love it. The speaker is at least twice as loud as the original iPhone 4, possibly even louder. I do notice a speed increase. I notice a connectivity increase. I do not get a degradation of my signal quality in areas that I used to. So the antenna really is an improved antenna. But the battery on that thing is just awful. Depending on what you're doing, you can sit there and if you have the battery percentage turned on, you can watch that thing just every few seconds go down. I'm not joking. It is the worst performing battery on any iPhone I've ever had. And I have owned every single model of iPhone, excluding the original one. I have had an iPhone 3G, and I have had an iPhone 3GS, I have had an iPhone 4 GSM, I have had an iPhone 4 CDMA, and now I have an iPhone 4S. And let me tell you, that is by far and away the worst performing battery life. By far and away. I think there's definitely a problem. Now, it really kills it when you use location services, although that's always been the case. But in iOS 5, you can set to-do tasks in iPhone and the Reminders application, and you can set it to notify you when you go to a certain location, like home or your business or something like that. And since it's always checking to see where you are, that will bring down the battery. They also have this application now for iOS 5 devices called Find Friends, or Find My Friends, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds creepy.
Well, it has the potential to be creepy, but it's an application that you can link up with friends, and you can see where they are, you can communicate with them. But you can set time limits on that, so if you can like have it expire at 7 o'clock p.m. on Friday or something. So I'm not too creeped out by that. Of course, I don't use it, and I never will. But that will also drag down the battery life a lot. But even when you don't have that stuff on, and you can tell when you have location services on, because there will be a little compass needle in the top right of the iOS, notification bar at the top. Even when that's not on, sometimes, and I can't tell why, but that battery will just go down and down and down and down. Now, that being said, it's still better than a lot of Android phones in terms of battery life, but it is a marked and noticeable downgrade from the iPhone 4 battery life. And I suspect it's a software issue. I suspect that it will be fixed in an upcoming update, and Apple unfortunately is baffled by this. They were caught off guard. They didn't realize that this was going to be an issue, and they're investigating it. So I don't know if it's going to be the next software update or if it's going to be the one after. But I suspect that they will find the culprit, and that they will get this battery life under control, because it is not pretty. At least when compared to what you had on the iPhone 4, which was a very robust battery.
Hopefully they fix it in the next update, because I really don't feel like waiting for an untethered jailbreak for longer than that.
What are you talking about?
Because I jailbreak my iPhone.
But you don't have an iPhone 4S.
Yes, but normally if they save a the whatever thing they find, the little error that they normally hold off on. If they know there's going to be multiple updates coming up, they normally hold off for like a month or two until they release an untethered jailbreak.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to be the case this time. If they figure out how to get that battery life under control, they're going to push that thing out as soon as possible. Now, for you, because you jailbreak, you would not have to update to that. Even if you get the notification over the air saying that, oh, hey, you know what, you have an update, you can dismiss that. They don't force that update upon you. So because you jailbreak, you can put off any update you want. Indeed, you actually waited a couple of weeks after iOS 5 came out before you upgraded. So you know that. So it's, unless it adds a lot of functionality, there's really no reason to do these updates, because most of the time there are security updates and things that jailbreaking actually fixes.
Yeah, they normally actually do release an, like in the last few times there was like some PDF security flaw, the jailbreak community actually released a fix for those who don't want to lose their jailbreak.
Absolutely. And also, any of the exploits that the jailbreak community exploits to jailbreak an iPhone, all of those exploits are in some way patched just by in the process of jailbreaking your iPhone. And it's actually part of the process. So in some ways, jailbreaking is securing your iPhone. In some ways. Not in all ways, but in some ways. Staying on iPhone 4S news, Chemslave, we talked last week about how they sold over 4 million units in just one weekend of availability, and that was just in the United States and a couple of other countries. But now it's going to be available in 22 more countries. And you can already tell the lines are going to be amazing for this. Just absolutely amazing. As a matter of fact, they might already be on sale. I think they are now that I think about it. And the lines have been amazing. They've been long. And this is going to be a big, big release for Apple. This 4S is going to be by far and away the biggest selling phone they have ever had. And, there was a story this week that Samsung, their arch nemesis in the litigation front, but also a big competitor of theirs in the smartphone space, has shipped more devices in this quarter of the year than Apple has, taking from them the title of number one manufacturer of smartphone handsets. Now that's because Apple, during the quarter that they're talking about, didn't have a new phone, and a lot of people were waiting for the 4S. And Apple, as a matter of fact, has even stated that for the this upcoming quarter, the one that we're in now, the holiday shopping season quarter, they expect over 40 million sales, 40 million units of iPhone to sell. But anyway, in the previous quarter, iPhone sales amounted to 17 million handsets, whereas Samsung shipped 28 million handsets, easily beating them in that quarter. Now, there are some people, however, that look at those numbers with a little bit of skepticism, because Samsung doesn't really specify how they classify a smartphone, because Samsung makes a lot of dumb phones and feature phones as well. And some of their phones that are sold, that are sold to third world countries and like European countries and even in America as well. Some of them kind of are smart, but not in a big way. So there's some debate about how they got to that 28 million number.
You can also debate the wordage.
Why is that?
Ship. They shipped them.
And not sold, exactly. Yep.
Yes.
Now, with Apple, however, whenever they say that, it's always sold, because shipped and sold are the same thing. Not a lot of people know this, but Apple has only a couple of days inventory which means that whenever they ship something, it's basically built to order. It's just-in-time manufacturing, almost. They have basically no inventory. They build as demand, as the market demands. Whereas most other companies, including Samsung, have forecasts that they build against. That they said, well, we expect to sell this many phones, so they ship that many phones into the channel. Sell them to Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Vodafone, and others. But that doesn't mean that those other companies sell them. As a matter of fact, many times it doesn't mean that. So you're absolutely right. With Apple's numbers, you can be assured that they sold 17 million iPhones. You cannot be assured that Samsung sold 28 million handsets. We just know that they shipped 28 million handsets. Now, that being said, they got paid for those handsets from those companies. So, that is important for them. It's not like they're not getting paid for those handsets. But that does not mean that they are getting the usage share that Apple is getting. That does not mean the customers are choosing Samsung over Apple. And regardless, there is no way that they're going to keep this title anyway, because Apple is just going to blow them out of the water in this upcoming quarter. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. You see what I mean?
Yep.
All right, so what do you want to talk about?
I have no idea.
Oh, God. Well, how about we talk about Google Plus? Because that's surely an important topic. Everybody likes Google. Google Plus.
And it's not important.
No, it's actually a stupid thing. But, you know, we can use it now. For the longest time, you couldn't even use Google Plus because Google Apps users were not allowed to. They couldn't sign up. They couldn't use the service. But this week, they were updated. The Google Plus service was updated so that apps users can, in fact, sign up now. We just have to wait until companies can sign up. Excuse me. And then we can be on Google Plus, and we are just going to take off.
Nope.
Well, actually, I hope we do, but just not on Google Plus. So that's a graveyard. Nobody's on Google Plus. That's going to... I absolutely... agree with John C. Dvorak when he says that this is the next Orkut. This really is the next Orkut. This will be really popular in some country like Brazil, where Orkut used to be popular, but it won't be popular anyplace else. I don't have high hopes for Google Plus. But Google
tested it several times, and it's completely useless.
Yeah. Now Google TV, on the other hand, is just a fantastic product. You know about Google TV?
Never used it.
Well, neither have I. I've been tempted several times to buy a Google TV unit because they've come down in price. But I haven't yet. But Google TV is their answer to IPTV to get internet content on your TV. It provided like YouTube and Netflix. And I think they have reached an agreement with Hulu. Originally, Hulu was not available on Google TV, but I think they fixed that. But it was supposed to be like you could access the web on there, but it was just terrible. Everybody hated it. It sold next to nothing, and it was just a mess. But they've upgraded the Google TV software. It runs Android, and so they've updated it to the latest publicly available. Actually, I can't say that. They've updated it to the latest shipping version of Android, which is Honeycomb, not Ice Cream Sandwich, which we're gonna get to. But Honeycomb, that's the latest one that's publicly available now, 3.0. And with this Honeycomb upgrade, Google TV gets applications, and it sucks just a little bit less. It's still a terrible product. Still terrible. Awful. Just a terrible product. But it's a little less sucky. Just a little less sucky. Now, ChemSlave, along the lines of Google, you know, Android 3.0 is codenamed... Honeycomb. Google, Android 2.3 was Gingerbread. Android 2.2 was Froyo. Android 2.1 was Eclair. Android 1.6 was Donut. And the latest version of Android 4.0 is going to be called Ice Cream Sandwich. Now,
let me stop you there. Right
okay.
Now. Why the fuck did they always keep these stupid? Oh, this is Froyo. This is Ice Cream Sandwich. This is Teacup. This is It's like, give me a number. 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. This whole naming things, these really cutesy things, it just gets me really annoyed. It's sort of like like the OS X being like Snow Leopard and Lion and Panther and what is the next? Probably going to be like Liger. It's like, give me a number. Stop doing this artsy cutesy stuff. I don't know where Panther is in relationship to Snow Leopard or Lion. I don't know where Froyo and Mango and whatever is in relation to anything else. It's just a word.
Well, now, I absolutely agree with you when it comes to mobile operating systems. And as a matter of fact, Apple does not codename their mobile operating systems, at least not publicly. I haven't even heard of any internal nicknames for these things, but they just call them iOS 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, 10.0. but they don't have cutesy names. Now, I do disagree with you, however, when you brought up OS 10, because operating systems have historically always had names attached to them. When you go back to the classic Mac OS, they had names involving music, like System 7 was
exactly. You don't know it.
I forget. No, well, it's just because I'm talking about an operating system that's over 25 years old. I can't think back that far. But you know, like Windows XP. Windows Vista, Windows 7 is different. That is just a number. I will give you credit there. But
yeah, Microsoft screwed up with the XP and Vista, but they were going so really greatly. 95, 98, 2000. You knew what the hell was going on. There's a progression. You know that 95 was old, 98 was newer, 2000 even newer.
But I don't see that being a problem with OS 10 because you always think 10. You always think in terms of, you know, 10.6, 10.7, 10.5, 10.4. And they have code names attached to them, but I think that's a brilliant marketing move. It gives them a lot of people who are not geeks like you and I have a hard time getting their minds around. What the hell is 10.7? What does that mean? What the hell is 10.7?
But someone that doesn't know anything about computers will know, hey, 10.6 is newer than 10.5.
But somebody who doesn't know a lot...
who doesn't know about computers won't know what the hell... Oh, this is Leopard. Who the hell knows what Leopard means?
Well, Leopard means it's a new version of OS 10. It does not mean that it's 10.5, which is what Leopard was. If you think about people not like us, but normal people, they're not comparing 10.7 to 10.6. They hear from Apple on a TV commercial or in an email, like, oh, hey, by the way, the new version of OS 10 is out. Lion, you might want to get that at some point. Lion is a simple, distinctive name. It's kind of a cutesy kind of name. A lion has nothing to do with a technology or an operating system. But it's a marketing ploy so people can, more easily think of, well, what the hell does Apple even make? What's their operating system? I know what Windows is, but what is Mac? What's the Mac? Oh, it's Lion. That's right. I don't know. This is just a difference of opinion, I guess. I'm not offended by big operating systems. Linux, by the way, does this as well. Ubuntu. By the way, Ubuntu is terrible at this because they do not have catchy names. Do you know what the current name is for Ubuntu?
I know one of them. The last one is like Oneric Ocelot or
something. That's right.
Like
I believe that's the current one. But then they had... What was the one they had intrepid ibex, hardy heron, jaunty jackalope.
Yeah, they had
karmic
Ubuntu is even worse than anything else.
Now that is just, of course, that's not meant for consumers really. That's meant for geeks. So, I guess we can kind of forgive them for that. But you know, I just, in terms of Apple, I'm not offended by the code names for. By the way, oh yeah, that's another thing. Apple typically doesn't always say Lion. It's only been very recently. It's only been in maybe the last two or three updates that they have been publicizing the code name. Previously, that would be like an internal thing that the media would pick up on, and that they themselves would be calling the operating system, whereas Apple would just be publicizing it as like 10.1 or 10.2, 10.3. I believe 10.4 was the first time they actively acknowledged that it was called Tiger. And then 10.5, when Leopard came out, they really started to publicize the cat names. Even before then, they saw that the media was really catching on to these names, so they thought, well, you know, screw it. We're calling it this already, so we might as well just publicize it. So that was almost a decision that Apple was forced into. But I definitely agree with you with Android, however. There was no excuse for these cutesy names on a mobile operating system, especially when half the people that buy your devices will not have access, will never get the new operating system. It's almost like taunting your customers, like saying, oh, we have this great new ice cream sandwich software. Oh, I'm sorry, you're never going to get it. It's just, I totally agree with you when it comes to mobile operating systems. All right, you want to add anything to that?
Not really.
Well, then let's stay on Google for a little bit, because they're kind of acting a little bit childishly. You know they bought Zagat, right?
Yes. Not really.
Well, you know what Zagat is, or Zagat, or whatever. It's like a Yelp competitor. It's they used to publish things, and they published reviews of of restaurants in various cities around the world, and you know, it's basically a Yelp competitor now because they have applications on smartphones and they have a website and all that. Anyway, when you type Yelp into Google, they show you ads now for Zagat. I just
really,
yeah, it's just a quick little thing, not anything to really latch on to, but it's just, you know, it's just classic Google. They're really becoming Microsoftian. I don't know. Take from that what you will. Just some other quick.
Do it on their Google website, or does it do it only on mobile?
Oh no, it does it on the Google website on the desktop. I don't think it will do it on mobile. You don't see a whole lot of ads when you do a Google search on mobile.
I've been Yelp and I don't see any ads, and I turned off my ad blocking.
maybe they stopped because they got caught. I don't know. I'd suggest that when you have a free couple moments that you try again, eventually I'm sure you will see it, or maybe they did stop. I don't know. But anyway, just to wrap things up, we have just a little tidbits. It looks like Google might be releasing a paid music service to compete with iTunes. By the time you hear this, it might already be out. Who knows? We'll talk more about that next time. We don't really have anything to say about that right now. The iPod creator, Tony Fadell, fancies himself a fancy designer. So he has created a beautiful line of thermostats. what everybody needs, right? Just a beautiful thermostat. It looks nice, though. I encourage you all to go and look at what he created. It's a beautiful thermostat. Motorola is a competitor with Apple in both smartphones and tablets. Their Zoom, however, is an iPad competitor, and it's not doing well. They only sold a few hundred thousand units, and it's pathetic. The Motorola Zoom did not do well, and I'm expecting it to go down in price significantly. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. You know, aside from that, Chemslave, I think that's it. We have pretty much hit everything that we need to hit. And
they actually deleted it because I type in Yellow Book and I get an ad for Yellow Book. I type in Yelp, I get no ads.
So they're not willing to advertise for Yelp, but they're not going to put Zagat there. They must have stopped doing it when they got caught. All right, Chemslave, do you have anything you want to add before we wrap things up?
Nope.
All righty then. So if you, you being the audience, if you enjoyed this show or any previous shows, and you want to, you know, tell us that, please go ahead. We don't mind getting compliments. Email us. Our email address is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. Also, if you want to criticize us, if you want to give us suggestions, tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. Again, email us those suggestions. And go to our show notes. We have copious show notes now, detailing the topics that we discussed and topics that we didn't discuss, but kind of go along with what we with the spirit of what we've been discussing. So go to our show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com and take a look. So Chemslave, it's been fun. It's been a good week, I think. I like this new format, and I thank you, sir, for a fine week in podcasting, and I will talk to you again next week.